Welcome to the Drive Time Show on Toledo's Sports Leader, 106.5 The Ticket.
Miguel swings it to fly ball, right field, way back and right. Garcia to the fence, looking up, and it's gone, a home run.
Wow.
Miguel Cabrera with a two-run shot to right is 24th, his fifth home run in the last week. The Tigers hit it.
This 106.5 The Ticket Sports Exclusive is driven by the Low Payment King, Ralph Mahalik Jr. at the Monroe Dodge Chrysler Jeep Ram Superstore.
Matthews got it, throws. He's got Golden Tate, who makes the catch inside the 15, inside the 10, and he's biking away. He's into the end zone. Pack the bags. Start the plane. This game is over. Oh, baby, how big is that?
Get ready. It's now Drive Time.
Sweeping left side, 10-5. Touchdown, Curtis Samuel. And the Buckeyes win it in overtime. A game that they trailed by 10 points to give Ohio State a 30-27 victory over the University of Michigan.
Here's the host of Drive Time.
Now Gretzky's got a breakaway. He's in all alone. He shoots and scores. Blocked the shot, sent Gretzky in, 3-0, Los Angeles. Wayne Gretzky gets the goal.
Mike Miller is out there watching.
On its way, here's Chris DeMarco to win it. He wins it! DeMarco! 15 feet, 4 inches, Sarah Cup, President's Cup to the United States.
All right, everybody, how are you? Another edition of Drive Time. We're at the Superstore tonight. As always, this show is driven to the Low Payment King, Ralph Mahalik. Visit MonroeSuperstore.com. July clearance sales event continues. A lot of great deals, a lot of great sales associates right here at the Superstore. All the guests, by the way, that appear on the phone line, presented by Vito's Pizza, ingredients you can trust. Well, the All-Star game last night, everybody, I got to tell you, over the past couple of years, I had a tough time getting into these. I did watch the game last night. I made it through 9 innings. I did not see Robinson Cano's home run in the top of the 10th inning. But, boy, it tells you about pitching at the major league level. Really something. You know, the first thing, when you watch Scherzer out there in his one inning, I mean, think about this guy who originally came up in the Arizona Diamondbacks organization. They had thoughts of making him a closer. This guy could have been a 50-save-a-year closer, but things worked out pretty well. His big contract with the Nationals. Tigers couldn't hold on to him, and I guess which, you know, led to my other thoughts. Some of the free agent signings over the past couple of years, Jordan Zimmermann and some other folks as well. Would have been nice to hold on to Max Scherzer of the Detroit Tigers. Did not happen. He was bringing some heat. Chris Sale certainly was at the top of his game, bringing some heat as well. Again, the American League wins it by a score of 2-1. But a lot of neat moments, I think, in the game last night. I love, you know, I'm into the, I guess, the history and, you know, some of the part of the ceremony and the pomp of the circumstance before a game. And, you know, it was great to see the Latin players that are in the Hall of Fame being introduced. You know, Rod Carew, seven American League batting titles. How about Orlando Cepeda? Now, here we are. We're living in today's world where they are legalizing the sale of pot. And Orlando Cepeda, back in his heyday, was about run out of baseball because he was a pot smoker. Here was a guy that was a great hitter, an all-star time, double digits, first baseman, St. Louis Cardinals, San Francisco Giants. He originally came up with the Giants, no room for him because of Willie McCovey, but had a great career, kind of tainted a little bit because of pot smoking. Now you look at it, it's being legalized all over the country. So he always wore that that badge of, you know, of not a good guy. I don't think that's the case at all. But Juan Marichal and Tony Perez and Ivan Rodriguez and the family of course, Roberto Clemente, all great things. But again, Scherzer overpowering. Sale was something else. 2-1 ball game. They moved right through that game. You know what they're talking about, some of the changes they're going to make in baseball. Games basically are averaging about, I want to say, over 3 hours, 3.5 hours. Some of these games going too long. Well, you know what the cure for this is? Pitching like we saw last night. You breeze through games. I understand. Believe me, I say that tongue-in-cheek. The guys that were on the field towing the rubber last night, not a ton of those guys to go around. But the other great moment, I think, was Nelson Cruz and Yadier Molina. you know, taking that selfie along with Joe West. I thought that was pretty neat as well. I mentioned this is one of the 3 days of the year this year. No sports, Major League Sports, NBA, NFL, NHL, of course, and Major League Baseball. Everybody back in action on Friday night. I'm not a big tennis guy, but I will tell you for background noise today, I had Wimbledon on, and I watched the number 24 seed. He was an American, Sam Querrey, beat the number one seed, Andy Murray. And Andy Murray was limping around. They talked about his athleticism, of course, being the main part of his arsenal. He couldn't move, but hats off to, again, Sam Querrey of the United States, who knocked off the number one seed. He was a 24 seed in this particular tournament, ranked 28th overall. And that kind of led me to just take a quick look, I guess, at, you know, the United States and the world tennis rankings. Where have the United States born players go? I mean, really, you look at Querrey, who I just mentioned, 24 seed at Wimbledon, 28 seed overall, a Jack Sock, I never heard of the guy, number 18, John Isner, number 21, and Steve Johnson, number 31. So, listen, tennis, the United States, world rankings. What I tried to do first was a friend of this show, Mike Ducey, who's in the University of Toledo Hall of Fame as a tennis player, went on to play a short time professionally, and also tried to get the men's coach and the women's coach, somebody on to talk a little tennis here, because again, we are in the first three or these 3 days of the year where there's no major sports going on. Major League trade deadline right around the corner. There's going to be some activity there, maybe, but I thought Mike Ducey gave me he was already had a predetermined event tonight to be at, couldn't go on, so I got that, but I thought it was kind of odd. I mean, you know, here we have a 5 o'clock show in Toledo. We try to get the men's coach or the women's coach on from the University of Toledo to talk tennis and couldn't get either of them on. So, again, you'd think they would like a little free publicity, and, you know, I know they're not going to recruit. I looked at the rosters of, you know, both the men's and the women's. I mean, there's guys from Mexico on there, and but, you know, I still think it would have been a good opportunity for something that we don't talk about a lot here locally, would have been the University of Toledo tennis program, but couldn't get anybody to come on. So we had to change gears a little bit. Coming up at 5:15 tonight, I'm curious to talk to Dan Cummins, the Dean of Sportscasters, City League Hall of Fame member as well. What's he going to be talking about tonight in this 3-day lull when it comes to sports? So Dan Cummins coming up at 5:15 tonight. My name is Mike Miller. Glad to have you on board, everybody. This is Drive Time. It's driven by the Low Payment King, Ralph Mahalik. Quick reminder, myself, Jim Cushlin, Bob France, all of the crew will be at the Marathon Classic next week. Jim will have updates from Highland Meadows on both Saturday and Sunday. Mike Jamison out there as well will be live on Saturday. Mick Gonzalez as well. I'll be out there all week from 5 to 6 with Drive Time. By the way, brought to you by the Monroe Golf and Country Club, our title sponsor. The updates will be brought to you by Sakura. Back with Dan Cummins after this timeout.
06.5 The Ticket. Here's the host of Drive Time, Mike Miller.
All right, everybody. A little Beatles for you there. Glad to have you on board, everybody. As I mentioned, one of the 3 days of 2017. No Major League Sports, no Major League Baseball, no National Football League, no NHL, no NBA. Talking All-Star low. Game last night. Again, American League winning by a score of 2-1. I had to come up with a guest today, and my first question to Dan Cummins, the Dean of Sports in Toledo, City League Hall of Famer, by the way, as well. And we're not going to bore the listeners, and, you know, I have to state how long that I've known Dan. That's only going to age us, by the way. But I wonder what the Dean of Sports is working on tonight in a slow sports day. Hello, Dan. How you doing?
You know what? Hi, Mike. 6 o'clock sportscast, recap of last night's All-Star game, showing the catch by Justin Upton and the strikeout by Andrew Miller that ended it. The big, McGregor-Mayweather fight coming up August 26th. Are you catching the hype with that big guy?
No, I have to tell you, I am. And you know, you make a great point here. And in fact, I was out to dinner last night and I saw some of this on the background, on the television set, and a former boxer was in this particular establishment, so I had a nice conversation with him. Also, Bronco McCart has weighed in on this as well. I will tell you, I don't think he has a chance, but I saw the Las Vegas betting line. If you put $100 on Conor McGregor, you win $575 if he beats Floyd Mayweather. So the Las Vegas people think there's absolutely a small chance for Conor McGregor to win it.
Well, I don't know how old he is. He's a much younger punk than Mayweather. He's a little long on the tooth, but Mayweather is used to using his hands. And I just think it. The logic would tell you if you have a MMA guy in there, he can't use his feet. That he's at a huge disadvantage, but the roles they're fitting into for the hype is McGregor's kind of a punk, smartass, insulting to McGregor, and McGregor just go, or Mayweather, and Mayweather just says, well, I'm just gonna go in there and knock him out. So I don't know. I'm not really into the sport at all. It's kind of an oddity to see what's gonna happen. That is in my sports cast because it's been hyped up now. They're on a media tour, and then, a nice story, Jerry Rutherford retires at Eastwood as a football coach after 34 years. His son Craig takes over the reins. So we have a story with that today as we get within, about 2.5 weeks from high school 2 days starting.
No, unbelievable. In fact, we talked some Ohio State football yesterday with Tim May of the Columbus Dispatch. Hey, trade deadline coming up. Tell me a little bit about that, Dan Cummins. The Tigers and the Mud Hens, of course, right in the middle and in the wheelhouse of what might happen. Rosters for both teams could be affected. What's your thoughts going forward? There's no doubt about it. I told Tiger fans last night, you know what? 2006, Jimmy Leland got him in the World Series. It's been a 10-year run. We have competitive baseball mostly into September. Those days are over. I expect them to be busy if they can get anything done. A lot of restraints there, salary and other things. What's your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, I have nothing new to add to the story, but I think Alex Avila's stock is pretty high right now. He's inexpensive. He's hitting really well from the left side of the plate. And Verlander, you'd think somebody would want him, but the Tigers will probably have to share in paying off that salary. Verlander seems accepting the fact that he may be going somewhere. But then again, gosh, his last start was dreadful. So I don't know if there's much of a market for a guy like him who's so hot and cold. If his career is on the downside, I guess maybe it is. But your younger guys like Fulmer, don't let him get away. There are a lot of guys, J.D. Martinez, of course, mentioned as being a trade bait, because, you know, he'll be gone into the year anyway. So, you're a Tiger fan. I'm a Tiger fan, and I was holding out hope that this team could get things turned around 3 years ago, 2 years ago, 1 year ago, and I've given up. I'm at the point now where like, yeah, let's do it. Let's start the rebuilding process. Apparently there are some really talented kids coming up in the lower minor leagues. We're not really seeing the benefit of that right now, but maybe we're a couple of years away from some talent coming through Detroit or Toledo and Detroit. So, I guess that trade deadline's coming up. It's time to blow it up and start over.
You know, I mentioned this yesterday. You got to look at Houston. They got 60 wins. The Yankees have turned things around rather quickly, reaping some of the benefits of the deals they've made over the years and some young talent as well. So it's time, and let's get some position players in there. If you're a Tiger fan, you want the Kinslers of the world and guys like that to play well, because maybe there's something at the other end of this. Again, talking to Dan Cummins. Of course, his sportscast coming up on Channel 11 tonight, not too long from now, joining us here on Drive Time. You know, I'm not a tennis guy, but I had background noise on this morning, Dan Cummins, and I watched a United States number 24 seed, Sam Querrey, beat the number one player in the world, Andy Murray, a guy you know, Paul Helgren, University of Toledo. I was efforting to get a couple of the, maybe either the men's or the women's tennis coach on today, or my old friend Mike Ducey, the University of Toledo Hall of Famer, on, and I couldn't track anybody down, but tennis and the United States, all of a sudden, I looked at the world rankings. Wow, the first time I've looked at that, but I was a little bit shocked that the United States over the years haven't developed more tennis players.
Well, for starters, I'm not surprised that I'm the only one that answers your phone calls when you make inquiries. But as far as the tennis players are concerned, I never heard of Querrey until just this week. Honestly, I don't follow pro tennis that much at all. Federer, of course, love him. He's had a great career. He's 35 and and keeps turning back the clock and hanging there with those younger guys. And he won today in three straight sets, a nice tiebreaker to finish the match. I mean, he won to go 3-0. So, you know, this guy's still in there. So he's got a shot in the final four. And it with Murray being taken out, maybe it's anybody's tournament this year.
Yep, it's got my attention anyways with a U.S.-born player there. Hey, before I let you go, you know, we broached this before, and I think you and I agree on this. I go to the occasional Mudhen game, and, you know, it always, you know, turns out you run into somebody and you end up socializing more than you do watching the game. But, you know, the Mudheads tried a little bit of a different tack this year, Dan Cummins, were more of a veteran-laden team, a lot of guys over 30. A little bit of a hot streak going into the International League All-Star game. But basically, the results about the same. Mudhen still trying to put a winning product on the field. Business plan, absolutely phenomenal year after year. It would be nice if they could get something going in the right direction and in the winning column anyways.
Well, they you're right. They have made a better effort, the Tigers have, in trying to get us a competitive team in Toledo because we haven't made the playoffs in several years now. Back-to-back titles back in, 05, 06, somewhere in there. But, boy, it's bleak. I really thought, Mike, opening day, that team they put out there and everyone seems so enthusiastic about the season. You have a nice blend of some prospects, but a lot of career AAA guys. A lot of fringe major league ball players. That usually is a recipe for a competitive team. But I think probably what we saw was the destruction of the Detroit Tigers, the injuries and the guys going up and down. I think that kind of took a lot of the gas out of it. And also Moya. You know, Moya was one of the top prospects in the Tigers organization. And boy, did he lay an egg. He didn't make the Tigers in the spring training. He starts out in Toledo patrolling the outfield and did he even bat 220? I don't know. He's in Erie. He's in Erie for God's sake. This is one of the top prospects they had and his upside seems to has been passed. So, that's been a huge disappointment because he would be probably a guy that would, be the cornerstone of your offense and your defense.
Dan, before I let you go, I had a couple of comments from folks I know and listen, I loved having you on. Right after and talking about your honor flight experience. How much feedback from that?
It's been wonderful. In fact, they have already reached out to us, and I'm invited to go next June as well. Yeah, thank you, Mike. I had a wonderful time. It was a deeply personal day for me. I met some wonderful people, not just the veterans, but also the people from Flag City Honor Flight that put it together. Made some friends, just a wonderful day. And yeah, two stories, one on the World War II vets that were experiencing the memorial, and then of course the Vietnam vets that I had a story on too. And just a wonderful experience. If you know anyone who served, you know, urge them to register and get in on that because it's just a wonderful day and it's an experience they'll never forget. They may not know anyone, but their experiences whether it's Vietnam or Korea or even World War II, get them on that honor flight. It's a wonderful day. We go to all memorials. We go we start out with World War II, Korea, Vietnam, the Air Force Memorial, Iwo Jima, Arlington Cemetery. It just a great day of bonding with a lot of really neat people. And I'll tell you what, it's almost a religion with the people that volunteer to go. People pay out of their pocket to go along on this thing, and then they personally escort a veteran for the day, and it's memorable for these people, too.
You know what, Dan? The older I get, the more emotional I get about things. And I can
Me
almost,
too!
I can almost
Me
just
too.
Picture myself going down there in something like Honor Flight, and I just know it would hit me straight in the heart and right between the eyes. I would probably, to be honest with you, I would probably be a mess, and I say that you know, only because of social media now, too, and my dad served in World War II and was on the USS West Virginia. And this generation, my dad never talked about any of these experiences.
No.
And I read about them now, and I just sit there and shake my head, and it puts a lump in my throat. What a great, great, you know, they were called the greatest generation. And I'm not taking anything away from the Vietnam vets or Korea or anything else, but what a group we had back in that era, huh?
Yeah, you know, the World War II guys, they are the greatest generation. This is a group of people from age 17 all the way up to 45 war breaks out, they volunteer, then they get drafted out of high school in the middle of the war, and they go off, and there is no knowing how long they're going to be gone, if they even come back at all. Their lives go on hold for 2, 3, 4, 5 years. At least in the Vietnam War, you had a one-year tour of duty, and then you had the option of signing up for another one. Of course, they had a draft in those days. Now we have a volunteer army, but all the wars are distinctly different in how they were conducted and their impact on our society and also on the soldier. But in World War II in particular, these people were gone for so long. It's just incredible the sacrifice they had.
No question about it. A couple of folks that my dad met on the USS West Virginia, my parents owned a tavern in this town in Toledo for a long time. A couple of those guys religiously, once or twice a year, with their wives would come down and see my mom and dad. It just, what a group it was. Absolutely unbelievable. Great hearing your voice, Dan. Have a great show. Appreciate you coming on. Thanks for picking up the phone.
My pleasure, Michael. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Dan Cummins, Dean of the Sportscasters, of course, in Toledo. This is Drive Time, ESPN 106.5, The Ticket. Little TAS electronics update right around the corner with Jim Cushlin. The show is always driven by the low-payment King Ralph Mahalik. July clearance sales event continues. Back with more after this.
Annoying traffic jams. It's the Drive Time Show on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. Here's your host of Drive Time, Mike Miller.
All right, everybody. Welcome back to Drive Time. Glad to have you on board. Tomorrow, by the way, everybody, will be out at the volunteers meeting and talking golf at the Marathon Classic. Trying to line up a good golf guest tomorrow at 5:15. Keep in mind, though, that the U.S. Women's Open gets underway tomorrow as well. Hats off to Judd Silverman. Usually after a major, it's a very tough week to get a lot of the marquee names at a tournament. But again, they love Toledo. They love the Marathon Classic. They love Highland Meadows. From Lexi Thompson to just about Lydia Ko, they're all going to be there. Marathon Classic, we'll be talking about that tomorrow night. And working on a guest, maybe a contestant who competed yesterday in the morning, by the way. Then Friday night we'll be up promoting Rocking the Hills Craft Beer Festival up near Devil's Lake, up into the Irish Hills area as well. So, again, glad to have you on board. All of our guests, by the way, presented by Vito's Pizza. Vito's Pizza, ingredients you can trust. Try the new location out in White House. And as always, Matt Markey joins us. His appearance brought to you by Jan's Net Craft Fishing Tackle. Fishing is their passion. Expert advice is always free. Visit Netcraft on Briarfield Boulevard in Maumee. Hello, Matt. How are you?
Mike, I'm doing fine this evening. How are you?
Very good. Just had one of your old media partners on with us, the Dean of Sportscasters in Toledo, Dan Cummins. So we had a nice chat, not only about on a slow sports day, really, Wimbledon, no major league sports today, but had a nice chat and talked a little bit, too, about his work with Honor Flight out of Findlay and what a great experience that was for him. So he says hello, by the way, to you.
Well, hello back to Dan. And I've had the privilege, the honor, I guess, to take part in that Findlay Honor Flight as well. And to anyone who hasn't done that, I would encourage them to at least, contribute to facilitate those flights. And even if you're not escorting somebody, there's always the opportunity to be there for the send-off and certainly to be there for the big welcome back celebration. And the one I was involved in was absolutely phenomenal. Just hundreds of people jammed in the general aviation terminal there at Toledo Airport, 11 o'clock at night, a band and all kinds of, celebration to welcome these guys back. And I was on a plane load of a few World War II veterans, mostly Korean War veterans like my father-in-law who I was escorting, and then a few of the Vietnam vets that weren't in great health, and they wanted to make sure they got them there, when they had the opportunity. So one more example, Mike, of just the really good people that are out there that put together something like this and just make it happen to get all those guys to D.C. so they can see these memorials that are there in their honor. And it was one of the most moving experiences of my lifetime.
You know, I just mentioned that to Dan Cummins. I think the older I get, anyways, I get a little bit more, you mentioned moving, I get a little bit more emotional about things. I think that's just human nature, the older you get. And believe me, I get it, and somehow I think I'm going to try to get involved with one of these flights over there one of these days. Hey, speaking of which, and emotional, but I was over at Lake Michigan on the coast this past weekend. My daughter became engaged over there this past weekend, a surprise. She did not know we were coming over for this thing. But I spent a couple of days, and obviously because of Kayla's engagement, it was a tremendous, tremendous weekend. But I also had a chance to look at some of the wonderful, wonderful, again, resources that the state of Michigan has, and the place where we stayed in a private home was right on Lake Michigan. But you know what, Matt? There was an inland lake there, and it was around Pentwater, and I'm not sure I had the name of the inland lake, but it escapes me now. But I got up early in the morning at 5:30 or 6 on Sunday, doing what I always do, got in the car a little bit, drove around a little bit, and lo and behold, was going to get in a good spot for the sunset, and looked off into the east there, and all of a sudden I see a bunch of wind turbines, and I said, you know what, besides all the controversy that you wrote about with the birds getting caught, especially up at Camp Perry in that freeway for birds, from a sightline situation, not the most pleasing thing as well. I get it. We got to look for alternative sources for energy, but it did not look good around that beautiful section of Lake Michigan.
No, that's one of the drawbacks is they are an eyesore, and there's also a noise element. I know that some of the folks that live around the wind turbines that are here west of Bowling Green have complained about that constant hum, and even the possibility that there may be some medical problems that are related to that. We just don't know, and I think it all goes back to a comment that Mark Shieldcastle made, and he's a retired avian biologist who was with the Ohio Division of Wildlife for many, many years, and one of the most respected voices when it comes to matters of birds, and certainly spent his whole life studying them along Lake Erie. And he said this whole wind energy movement has just been pushed way too rapidly without first studying and taking a step back and doing an examination of what are the ramifications here. And that was his concern with the big push there along Lake Erie. Sure, it's windy, and there's quite often a lot of wind, but does that make it the best place, to put wind turbines? And certainly his concern, is with the birds, and primarily, his initial concern was with the bald eagles, because he was there on the front lines when they were teetering on the edge of extinction, here in this region, and fighting to, preserve their habitat and give them a chance to get a new foothold. And now that we've restored that population, he'd hate to see a bunch of wind turbines go up and end up, killing some bald eagles and all. But you're right. It's a multi-pronged issue. And what it does to the scenery or the landscape or the panoramic view or whatever is an issue. And, that's one of the reasons even some of the places where, the environmental movement is the strongest, like say, Cape Cod, Martha's Vineyard and all, they have fought, tooth and nail to keep wind turbines out of there because they don't want to mess up their beautiful view. But yet, we see them going up a number of places, and you're right. There's quite a few along that shoreline there, along Lake Michigan. And there are literally hundreds of them on the Ontario side of Lake Erie. If you make that drive across the bridge and then drop down from Windsor and head towards Leamington and Wheatley and Kingsville and those places, that side of the lake has got really hundreds of wind turbines, and very little, if any, study as to the long-term effects on wildlife and really the long-term viability. Is this really a way that's going to be able to produce energy efficiently, cost-effective, once all the subsidies and all that stuff are gone? That jury is definitely still out.
No doubt about it, and that's talked to a lot of folks. I know that area in Leamington very, very well, believe me, and a lot of folks up there say for the amount of energy being produced, like you mentioned, when the subsidies run out, really, again, long ways from getting the real answer on that as well. Hey, at my drive up here to the Monroe Superstore, almost on a daily basis, I see those big black birds. I know what they are. They're turkey buzzards. But I got to tell you, right now, you started talking about these black vultures. I was astounded at the amount of damage they do and their vicious nature that a lot of folks, you know, concerned and that are involved with outdoor activities. Really, this has wreaked havoc on a lot of different things in a lot of different ways.
It certainly has. And I, as I mentioned in the story, the place where I was initially introduced to this phenomenon was in the Everglades about 5 or 6 years ago. And I pulled into one of the more remote, you know, areas where you can park and kind of walk along these tall banks and look and see what the bird life and maybe some gators and so on. And there were warning signs everywhere to not leave, you know, the top of your convertible down and to cover your car to protect the windshield, the vinyl top, the seal around the windshield. Anything that was exposed that was rubber or vinyl was susceptible to this damage by these black vultures. And they were sitting there right in the trees by the parking lot, kind of waiting for the next victim. And, it's a bizarre thing. The biologists scratching their heads trying to explain this activity, but it's not a, something that's unique to a few birds in one place. It seems to be a problem in South Carolina, in Virginia, as I researched this, and now, several state parks in Ohio. It's become, you know, a very serious problem because they're doing major damage to boats and vehicles that are parked near there. And it's tough because they're a federally protected bird. It's not something that you can just shoot, you know, if you think it's causing an excess amount of damage. And it's a tough question to deal with. And I got a couple nasty emails from people saying that, you know, these birds, leave them alone. They were there first and so on and so forth. And I get that, you know, approach or whatever, but we have to figure out how to live in close proximity to wildlife and do it where it's not detrimental to either one of us. And, so I think they need to kind of step up the game in terms of ways to just kind of deter these birds from coming there. And, I think we need to get more creative in the way we do that. But I also think that there are, you know, methods that we haven't explored yet, you know, short of exterminating a few of them. But it's a bad situation when there's in the hundred thousands of dollars of damage, you know, in a couple marinas that's, you know, small state parks in southern Ohio. That's no little deal.
He is the Toledo Blade outdoor editor. Matt Markey is his name. His stories, of course, appear on Tuesday, Friday, and Sunday. He's on our show every Wednesday. Saw your story this morning, Matt, by the way, with a lot of politicians and folks from, you know, the Wildlife Division. Boy, another Mike Miller around. Unbelievable. We have Mike Miller with the Hens, Mike Miller, the real estate guy, myself, and a host of other ones. But it sounds like he had a great conversation with the folks that seemed very pleased in that day out on Lake Erie. Again, that would have been on Tuesday, with all the young, small walleye, that class of 15 and 16 for, 14 and 15, that eventually will just continue to be great stuff for anglers all over the Midwest.
Yeah, it was a good reminder, I guess, for some of them, and also an introduction for others that, you know, the importance of that fishery, the tourism side of it, the billions of dollars that Lake Erie generates for our economy. But it also showed them how, you know, how well that fishery is being managed, you know, by the hardworking folks who are kind of on the front lines with the Division of Wildlife. There's a lot of problems, with the leadership in the ODNR now, a lot of, turmoil at the top of the structure, but the folks down at the base that are out there, bare knuckled and sunburned and doing the work every day are doing a great job of managing that fishery, and they have to put up with a little bit of frustration, I guess, if you're out there fishing and you're catching a lot of fish that are undersized and not legal to keep. But I think it's very short-sighted if you complain about that, because those fish, you know, next year and the year after and beyond are going to provide an incredible fishery there, fish that we can harvest that will be of the 15-plus, you know, legal size. And it's literally 100 fish every time you go out, Mike. And if you catch 20 of the ones that are too small for every one you know, it's legal, you can put in the cooler, that's okay. You know, that's money in the bank, and that's the only way to look at it.
You're talking to Matt Markey, Toledo Blade Outdoor Editor. As always, his appearance brought to you by Jan's Netcraft. Visit jansnetcraft.com. Matt joins us on the Vito's Pizza phone line. Ingredients you can trust. Newest location, by the way, is in White House. And your other story this week, and believe me, I'm well aware of this, golf courses in both Ohio and Michigan over the last decade probably have been closing at a record pace. But a lot of folks that are thinking outside of the box, whether it's for the zip liners and so on and so forth, you know, you have some wonderful property that's been kept up, and a lot of them, you know, have been able to keep it almost in a pristine condition for a lot of other types of activities. You know, again, thinking out of the box and trying to utilize that space for other activities.
Yeah, it's one of those stories that has a certainly a downside, because it's sad to see those businesses go and there's, you know, people and families and incomes involved there. But the plus side is that it's not, you know, those properties are not going to just be written off as some kind of a waste. And I've seen several of them transition into very valuable enterprises. And those folks, you know, down in the Hocking Hills area are very creative in the way they converted what was a fairly mediocre hillside golf course into one of the top zip line courses in the country. And now it's, you know, busy as heck, and the landscape is still beautiful. It's, you know, still has every bit of charm it has as a golf course. But now, there are a lot of people in there utilizing it, and there's, you know, generating jobs and income and tourism and so on. And then, you know, the Port Clinton golf course that was closed up there north of Oak Harbor, I saw that sit there for years and years for sale, and then I slowly saw it kind of decaying, and the greens were growing. You know, seeing a green that's a foot high, the grass is a foot high, is a bit odd. And then the fairways, and then I see small saplings sprouting up in the fairways, and finally, I think they just gave up. You know, there was no buyer out there. Like you mentioned, it's a tough time for golf, as a business in general. Maybe it was overbuilt, you know, in the 90s or the, you know, when the Tiger Woods phenomenon came along. I'm not sure, but it's good to see those properties being utilized. And that one there north of Oak Harbor, that Port Clinton Club, will be part of the Ottawa National Wildlife Refuge. And they're really going about it in a smart way here to make sure they use it the right way and make it a good place for wildlife and for people.
Matt, hey, I wanted to ask you this. Somebody ran into to me today and kind of stopped me and brought up our segment here. But he was curious about something, and I should know the answer to this. I know you spend a lot of time. You mentioned Port Clinton out by the islands there, and, you know, Kelly's Island and Put-in Bay. Folks that live year-round there, what is their access on and off the island in the dead of winter, if there's any?
Well, there's an airstrip on South Bass. There's an airstrip on Kelly's, and I believe there's an airstrip also on Middle Bass Island. Now, they will boat, you know, use the ferries, will run right up until there's window pane ice coming across the lake. So the ferries are really the lifeline there. The Miller Ferry to South Bass Island, that also goes to Middle Bass, is really the, you know, the grocery wagon, and it brings them gas and propane and things like that. Same thing the Kelly's Island Ferry does out of Marblehead, connecting that island. The toughest time for them, Mike, is the time in between when we have window pane ice until there's relatively safe ice to drive a snowmobile or something across. In that period, which can be fairly long in the early winter and the late winter, the air is their, you know, flight is their only method, other than a couple creative folks have come up with hovercraft that can go across skim ice or, you know, pockets of water and then ice. It's a, you know, kind of a neat innovation. They can use a hovercraft to get back and forth. But if there's an emergency, it's usually a helicopter to one of the islands back to the mainland if it's a medical emergency. But, you know, most of the year, the ferry is their lifeline. And when it's not, it's they have to get their supplies and their travel back and forth by air.
Good stuff as always. Hey, before I let you go, Matt, what are you working on the upcoming week?
Well, I've got a piece for Sunday. It's an update on something we did in the past on that rare white deer herd in upstate New York. And it's good news. The buyer of that property has gone into agreement with the white deer folks, and they're going to make sure that they maintain that area so the deer are there. They're going to start tours in October, and people will actually be able to go there and see the white deer, take pictures, and also tour the old mill.